Hello, I'm Lino Ahmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. April is World Autism Month. Autism spectrum disorder affects one in every 270 people worldwide, according to the World Health Organization. The degrees and needs of people with autism are varied and the spectrum is pretty broad. The condition is normally characterized by abnormal patterns of behaviors or activities such as difficulty with communication and poor eye contact. The autistic disorders include early infantile autism, Asperger's syndrome, and pervasive developmental disorder. Autism poses a special challenge in Africa, where many parents are confronted with the lack of diagnosis and adequate resources. Furthermore, various myths and misunderstandings complicate access to treatment and care for those who live with the condition. I spoke with Susan Kwizera Gakwavu, behavior assistant and founder of New Life Autism Foundation, who shares some of the main issues surrounding the condition in Africa and steps to help those who live with autism. Susan Gakwavu, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Autism is a developmental disorder that can be seen around the world. How can we understand the condition?
Autism is a complex developmental disability that hinders, you know, our children from way back to 2 years and up. And it interrupts their social interactions and communication and also, you know, different sensory sensitivities and delay in speech and also, you know, some different disorders.
So at what point should parents be concerned regarding autism? Because we know that children at a certain age, they don't speak and they start developing, you know, 1, 2 years old.
I would say actually 2 years, because that's when a child begins to communicate, to try to speak. And that's when a parent recognizes that, you know what, there is something that is not right with my child.
And what are some of the telltale signs that we should look for?
Delay in speech, number one, and also different behaviors. There's that shyness and also kids not wanting to interact with other children. So pretty much at that age, those are the things we look out.
Up until now, we don't really know the causes of autism. What can you tell us about that?
Exactly. No one knows the cause and no one knows, you know, the cure. But what we do when we recognize, you know, that there is a difference in this child, then we seek, you know, medical attention. And then, you know, we follow up with, you know, what the doctor said.
What are the options in terms of treatment? Because we understand that it's a condition that cannot be cured. So what are the treatment options?
The treatment, I would say, pretty much is the therapist. You know, I mean, the therapy and the therapist, definitely. The therapy which give them, depending on their needs, you know. So we work with therapists, you know, and also there are some who really need medical attention, like, you know, medication. There are those who are really on medication, but mostly I think they need therapies.
There are many challenges that parents and children who are affected have to deal with. And we understand that in Africa, there are more challenges because of lack of resources, even misconceptions and myths around autism. What are some of the misconceptions and myths that you've come across in your practice?
They name those children, you know, they are cursed, they are bewitched. Those are pretty much things I've heard from Africa. And this has definitely caused a lot of stigma, you know, within the children and the parents. And I think because of that, they tend to leave these children into their homes, keep them, you know, in the homes, don't take them out because, you know, of what people think they are. So it's a big challenge, and I think that's where the problem is, you know, not knowing autism is, and they're giving it different names.
So how can we increase the help for children in Africa? You talked about awareness, that's very important, but what can be done further to help children with autism and their parents on the continent?
We need to continue, you know, do the awareness, be the spokes, you know, people to those children, and also encouraging, you know, parents. Talk about it, you know, let the parents, you know, engage the parents, because through my experience, I've seen a lot of changes when you open up with the parents and talk about it, and then encourage them, tell them what it is, because being, you know, to be honest, they don't know what it is, and what they go with is what people are saying, you know, that so and so's child is bewitched or is cursed or is mad, you know. And one thing I've also seen, they end up taking these children into those hospitals, the mentally, you know, hospitals, yet they're not supposed to be there. But because of lack of information, lack of what, you know, it is, they don't know what autism is. They just try to do what they feel, you know, they can do. But awareness, definitely, and also conferences and those programs we put out, you know, talk about it with parents. The workshops has really, really helped them.
Now, with the COVID-19 pandemic this past year, how have you seen the situation for children of autism? How has it affected the children and their parents?
We all know what COVID has done. It has affected each and every one of us in different ways. But when it comes to those special children, it's a big challenge. You know, not only in America, I mean in Africa, but in America, you know, like my organization here, we had to close and we had to give services, you know, individually, privately, you know, in homes, in group homes. But imagine in Africa, whereby, you know, such an organization closes and the children will go back home and they won't get what they've been getting. Remember that now they're going back to their, you know, probably call it what, hard life, you know, yet they've been in an environment where they had coped, where they have learned, where they have engaged, where they have identified the weakness, the strength. Now they are going back to zero, you know. So a lot of parents are really struggling with these children, and it's because of this COVID-19. When I talk about the struggle the parents are having mentally, you know, emotionally, they're not sleeping. You know, one of the parents actually sent me a video of her son the whole night without sleeping, mentally, emotionally. So they're affected in so many ways, you know, and this has really caused a lot of dysfunctioning in families and, you know, getting also some sickness, you know, mentally. You know, so it's a big challenge, you know, in Africa.
And even for the children, right? You talk about how the, you know, maybe some of the care that where you see progress, maybe there are some setbacks, maybe?
Oh, yeah, big time. Because now, let me say that child has been on a schedule of waking up in the morning, having breakfast, you know, taking a shower, having lunch, doing different activities. Now, at their home, they're doing nothing. It's just sleeping. So it has also affected them mentally and also physically, because some of them were able to, those who are not even running or doing some yoga exercise, you know, when we started with them, they were doing much better. But now imagine home. They can't get those activities. They can't get the support, you know, we give them. So it's really affecting them mentally.
How do you reverse the setback?
Actually, one of the things that I've seen, not like we could do it everywhere, but is sending the therapists to their homes, you know, once in a while, at least once a week, you know, go visit them, do a little bit of therapy here and there, take a walk with them, and, financial, you know, help. Remember, everything was closed. They don't have food, you know. So those are the things also that we were able to support with those families.
What is your final message about autism?
My final message on autism is to keep, you know, the good work. Be the advocate for these children. Push it, you know, push it. Let them get the policy, you know, let them be recognized, you know, in their countries. Let them know that they are part of the, you know, part of the world, you know, and it will take me and you to be the advocate to make that change, you know, make a difference, make an impact, you know, and not giving up, because it's so easy to give up on them. So let's continue, you know, to push the narrative of what autism is, not just, you know, what people think it is, and then we will make a difference. We'll make the world a better place.
Indeed, making the world a better place is what we hope for. Thank you so much, Susan Gakwavu, for your time.
Thank you for having me, Leonard.
That was Susan Kwizera Gakwavu, Behavior Assistant and founder of New Life Autism Foundation. It is time for a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me with a panel of VOA journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including as the trial of former police officer Derek Chauvin continues. Hundreds of people gathered outside a police station in the U.S. state of Minnesota to protest the deadly shooting of a man by an officer. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next up on the program, the epidemic of gun violence in America. Why is it so difficult to pass gun safety legislation? We'll talk with two activists about the deep-seated cultural and political obstacles to reform, President Joe Biden's recent executive orders, and more. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Health Chat. We turn now to the COVID-19 pandemic. The World Health Organization reports that countries in sub-Saharan Africa are vulnerable to a potentially deadly third wave of COVID-19 as healthcare systems in many states face funding shortages. Andy Gondo reports from Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe is among a number of countries that the World Health Organization WHO says are vulnerable to a potentially deadly third wave of COVID-19 that will be worsened by overburdened medical facilities. In a recent report, the World Health Organization said sub-Saharan Africa is likely to face a surge of new cases from COVID-19 variants in the next few weeks. The WHO says the region now has more than 3.1 million confirmed cases, with at least 110,000 deaths. That is up from 2.7 million infections recorded at the end of December. South Africa has the most cases, with 1.5 million reported patients and nearly half the continent's deaths. Dr. Obwogo Subiri is with Kenya's COVID-19 National Steering Committee.
There's definitely a surge in infections in Kenya. People are moving freely around. There's also a curfew starting at 8 o'clock. There's closure of bars, closure of hotels except takeaway, closure of places of worship, and also bars and restaurants. Generally, our test rates have been very, very low. And in most cases, we tend to test people at risk. In other words, those who present with symptoms. So I think it's very difficult to sort of look at it and say these are waves, but generally there is a surge in infections.
One new concern is a new variant of COVID-19 that was first identified in travelers from Tanzania. Neighboring Kenya is vulnerable to the variant because of its proximity to the East African nation. The WHO report says the pandemic has hit health personnel around the world hard, with 267 health worker infections being recorded daily. In several African countries, healthcare workers have threatened or taken labor actions because of a shortage of personal protective equipment, a lack of medical supplies, and overwork. Zimbabwe's COVID-19 National Task Force says it has stepped up strategies to thwart the spike in cases. Among its plans are a vaccination program and a proposed vaccine passport. The vaccination program aims to reach 60% of the population, or 10 million people. So far, more than 115,000 Zimbabweans have been vaccinated. In Zimbabwe, as in other countries, shortages of vaccines and of the supplies and equipment needed to give patients the shots has slowed vaccine efforts. There is also the aspect of vaccine skepticism. Healthcare experts say in many African countries, a lack of funds has hampered COVID-19 testing. So much of the continent's population is going untested. That could mean the current World Health Organization statistics undercount the number of people who have actually contracted the virus. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
Now to Botswana, where health officials are investigating the death of two people after they received the Covishield vaccine. The government says its vaccination program will not be suspended during the investigation. From Gaborone, Botswana, reporter Nkondisi Dube has the details.
A Minister of Health statement says the deceased are both above the ages of 55 and had just been inoculated. Botswana is in the middle of a COVID-19 vaccination program after receiving 30,000 doses of Covishield as a donation from India last month. It's produced by Verity Pharmaceuticals and Serum Institute of India in collaboration with AstraZeneca. The incident has been reported to the country's medicines regulator, the Botswana Medicines Regulatory Authority, BOMRA. BOMRA Clinical Trials Director Bathazara Dikurumuthu says the results from the investigation are expected within 2 weeks.
It usually should be based on access to information, and then especially in the case of vaccine, there's possibility that sometimes there is, could also be a postmortem that is done. But I'm not talking about only the death as an outcome. It is possible sometime, you know, the other severe discomforts the patient may suffer from. Even that may have to be investigated well. So that process may take any time between 10 to 12 working days.
He urges people to report any adverse effects after vaccination.
I think it is important for all of us, including the vaccinees, the one who takes the vaccine, and also the healthcare professionals who provide the vaccination, to inform any discomfort that may face or suffer from after the process of vaccination. It need not be said that it has to be a very serious event, or it should be a mild event or a mild, no. Anything that you find not your usual thing, anything that is unusual that you feel, should be reported.
Kurumuthu urged people to continue getting the vaccine. Authorities say there is impressive demand, with queues at health centers reported as early as 4 a.m. The country has vaccinated 17,808 people, with the death toll from the coronavirus at 663. For VOA, this is Nkondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
Healthcare workers in Cameroon say they are reluctant to take the coronavirus vaccine donated by China, despite authorities asking them to be the first. 200,000 China-donated Sinopharm doses arrived Sunday, but Cameroon's medical council says only a few hundred people have taken it, among them about 90 health workers. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Yvonne has been sick for years. For the past year, she has tried to go abroad to see a specialist, but travel outside Cameroon is difficult because of the COVID pandemic. She finally found an alternative at Home Care Services, a private company that enables a patient to speak with a doctor living abroad. Yvonne has chosen to receive a second medical opinion from a specialist in France. This is done in the presence of a general practitioner who is at her side in Cameroon.
Ça fait vraiment longtemps que j'essaie de chercher des spécialistes en vain, I've been trying in vain for a long time to meet specialists without success. Today I had the opportunity to have a consultation with one who was abroad and who gave me the direction for the solution to my problem. I am really happy for that.
The system was made possible by the Cameroon company Medic Afrique. The patient or a patient's family living abroad pays a fee for Medic Afrique to connect the patient with doctors living in France or Canada. Medic Afrique has almost 100 clinics and specialists participating in the network, with doctors speaking to patients in Cameroon, Togo, and the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Because of the enthusiasm of the users, we are working in the medium term, even in the very short term, to extend the product to the whole of Africa, to as many countries as possible.
Dr. Daniel Wang, who lives in Cameroon, says the online consultations are a good idea and notes that many patients now use the technology because of COVID-19. But he hopes that patients also continue to have confidence in their local doctor.
We must make it clear to the patient that we are in the best position to give direction. We simply integrate what comes from elsewhere so that we do not have a limited opinion. This spirit of collaboration must also be with the other doctors abroad, who must know that they are not dictating a way of doing things to us, but are adding to what we are doing to be able to complete our opinion.
At Cameroon's National College of Doctors, they also believe that patients benefit from getting a second opinion from doctors abroad. At the same time, says Dr. Jean Bethenol Zambo, the pandemic has shown that the country's medical system can handle most problems.
I would like to say that COVID has given us the opportunity to prove that we can treat ourselves in Cameroon. For months, people have not left the country, yet they have been treated in Cameroon.
So far, about 500 patients have used the Medic Afrique system, with more signing up every day. For Anne Zwanke in Yaoundé, Cameroon, Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News.
With rollouts of COVID-19 vaccine hampered by misinformation, some renowned artists in Africa are trying to create awareness and encourage people to get their shots. Mavis Okere in Hwaso is in the Ashanti region of Ghana, and he
Cubans
has more.
Emmanuel Asoko, an international acclaimed musician and national ambassador for UNICEF Nigeria, is among those helping to spread the word that vaccines are safe and effective. He says this initiative was largely driven by the United Nations Children Fund using its ambassadors and cultural influencers like him, who were into music and other art forms, to raise awareness and demystify the COVID-19 vaccination efforts. He says the misinformation isn't grounded in facts or research, noting that vaccines have been saving lives for decades.
Vaccines have been known to be very effective. You know, over time, we've had, you know, vaccination, especially for children against killer diseases, you know, measles, smallpox, chickenpox, the likes, you know, over time. And so this is just another timely intervention, especially, you know, in the midst of a pandemic that has majorly disrupted our lives. And so it only makes sense that, you know, we should use, you know, the tools that are available to us to sensitize people and make people understand that vaccines work.
Asoko says the sooner people get themselves vaccinated, the quicker that Africa and the rest of the world can return to some semblance of normalcy. He says the quick response in creating and producing the COVID-19 vaccines bode well with coping with future pandemics.
I feel like the vaccine has a very important role in helping us return, like I said, to normal life, in helping us return to normalcy. Economy, family, social interactions, all kinds of things have been obviously interrupted gravely by the COVID-19 pandemic. pandemic. And I feel like, you know, the vaccine more than many other options right now, especially with the combination of other social protocols, provide more than just a glimmer of hope, I think. It gets us back into that space where we can actually begin to function, where we can have sporting activities, where we can have concerts, where we can have just knowing that there is that layer of protection against the virus.
Asoko urged people who question the vaccines to do research before making unfounded statements and discouraging others from taking them.
I find that what happens is we move from a place of supposing to a place of affirming, where it probably starts as a rumor, and before you know what's happening, you know, it becomes a matter of authority.
He says the media and various stakeholders need to help people understand the vaccines work and should be embraced. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Jassou in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
New York social worker and psychotherapist says more is needed to address the pandemic's impact on mental health, particularly among healthcare workers. VOA's Mariama Diallo has
Amina
more.
Amina Woods is a New York social worker and psychotherapist who spent the last year helping clients manage the mental health impact of the coronavirus.
People are not well during this time. People are exhausted. People are feeling overworked. People are overworked.
That includes clients in the medical field who care for COVID patients.
There was a lot of appreciation for the healthcare workers and the work that they do, but I don't think that there's been enough concern about how the work that they've been doing has been impacting their physical health, their mental health.
Officials say it's a global problem.
The pandemic has taken a huge toll on their physical and mental health, with devastating effects on their families and communities. Anxiety, depression, insomnia, stress have all increased. I give thanks to those that have stood up in one of humanity's toughest periods.
Woods says she too is among those feeling the mental health toll.
I've had moments where I feel just disorganized, unfocused, anxiety, just living with anxiety like in the pit of my stomach.
The single mother says she's also seen an impact on her 12-year-old son, who, like many kids, has attended school virtually for over a year.
It's definitely taken a toll on his social-emotional health. I've never seen him, and pardon me if I start crying, but I've never seen him so down and so sad.
According to a recent study by the American Psychological Association, prolonged exposure to COVID-19 stressors is taking a toll. Nearly 3 in 10 essential workers in the study reported a decline in their mental health since the start of the pandemic. Woods says she has found ways to cope.
I feel like the deep breath thing might sound cliche almost, like just take a deep breath, but deep breaths really, really help. Sometimes if I'm really, really at the edge, I'll just go in the bathroom and I'll just cry it out, which is helpful. In this little bitty apartment, I started just cruising around, or if I take my garbage out to the incinerator, I'd ride my roller skates to the garbage chute.
Simple steps as people around the world try to push beyond a dark and trying year. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
And that's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/VOA Health Chat and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linor Mudu in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight. Health workers in Cameroon are reluctant to take coronavirus vaccine donated by China. After heavily armed fighters entered the country from Libya, the government says the situation in northern Chad is now completely under control. And Twitter plans to open an office in Ghana. All these on VOA's Africa News Tonight.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices.